You've probably heard the term competitive advantage more than twice. Ostensibly representing the advantage that one firm has over another, it is a driver of strategy and strategic communication, and it is assumed to presage superior performance over other firms or greater adaptability to new situations. But is it really a useful term, or is it just a MacGuffin? My name is Tom Galvin, and these are my reflections on management. I suppose I should describe what a MacGuffin is. It's a plot device that's used in film, and it's defined loosely as an object, a goal, or other motivator that a protagonist or a character in the film pursues, often without much in the way of narrative explanation, meaning that it's essentially undefined, and it doesn't really have to be anything. The term was actually made popular by Alfred Hitchcock a long time ago, and I'm just going to provide what he said in a lecture one time. He described the MacGuffin as follows. It might be a Scottish name taken from a story about two men on a train. One man says, "What's that package up there in the baggage rack?" And the other answers, "Oh, that's a MacGuffin." First one asks, "What's a MacGuffin?" "Well," the other man says, "it's an apparatus for trapping lions in the Scottish Highlands." The first man says, "But there are no lions in the Scottish Highlands." And the other one answers, "Well then, that's no MacGuffin." So you see that a MacGuffin is actually nothing at all. Now, of course, I wouldn't dare describe competitive advantage as nothing at all. I think mostly everybody who hears the term kind of knows sort of what it means. And it's sort of used to describe things that or conditions that basically pit one firm as having an advantage over another without necessarily having to elaborate on precisely what the advantage is. So, for example, here's one statement made about 3 years ago about an initiative, which I won't name. So this particular initiative is a strategy that, quote, is much more than just technology alone. It's about increasing the competitive advantage of our American forces, end quote. Another one, quote, in just a few years, if we don't change the trajectory, we'll lose our qualitative and quantitative competitive advantage. Now, these were all statements made by military leaders, but you could almost substitute just about any firm using the term in a similar fashion. It's in two words. It carries a lot of meaning. But then, you know, what does it really mean? And actually, there have been various efforts in history to try to come up with some definition of what competitive advantage is for the purposes of making it, you know, perhaps empirically useful or scientifically useful. So I'll first start, they kind of go into two camps. So in first, I'm going to talk kind of the simpler of the two, which is the economic definition. And that definition is followed along with simple concepts such as better quality, lower cost, greater diversity of products and services. Things that would signal an expectation that one firm with those qualities would perform better than firms without those qualities or different types of firms. So as a competitive advantage in a commercial situation, then it's easy to see how that would those types of qualities could be compared on some level terms, perhaps, between one firm and another. Okay. Now, there is another concept which is related to this, which is comparative advantage. And I think that this is, this perhaps is more accurate. And I think some scholars have indicated so as well, that when you're talking about competitive advantage in this way, you're really talking about comparative advantage, in which you're trying to align two firms with equitable something. Either the products are equitable or the services are equitable, or their market position is equitable or comparable, by which you could then come up with either a qualitative or a quantitative measure to compare to the two and say, this firm is stronger than that firm. The quality, the cost, and greater diversity are generally pretty common among those types of definitions, and it makes sense in the commercial environment. The other stream is political. And by this way, we're talking more about the competitive advantage of nations or nation states or basically political bodies of some kind. And even within there, there's a couple of different ways of looking at it. One popular approach is to think about competitive advantage that a nation provides for the firms within it. So it's sort of like a politico-economic definition. So you consider the work of Michael Porter, who wrote The Competitive Advantage of Nations and a whole host of other works, came up with what he called the diamond of national competitive advantage, which are various factors that allow the firms within the nation to succeed, such as the capacity for production, the nature and strength of local demand, the strength of supporting industries, and various other factors. So you can see how perhaps the same firm or the same a similar firm in one nation with those types of resources and capabilities at its disposal within reach would have an advantage over a firm that was placed in a different nation that didn't have those same qualities. And then there's the actual comparison of national power itself. And there's a host of scholars who've attempted to formulate such a thing. The first one I have here is of Clifford German in 1960, who devised sort of a mathematical formula to estimate a nation's power according to largely its military prowess. In particular, his formula was the strength of their nuclear power times other factors like population, resources, and others summed together. Obviously, that was done in 1960, was definitely a product of its time, and one could imagine how comparing two nations' strength on the basis of nuclear power being the determining factor would be really strong. Later ones perhaps were a bit more nuanced. Maybe proliferation was part of it. I don't know. But I'm going to highlight one. Ray Klein, who in the late 70s had come up with a similar mathematical formula, but took into account a whole host of different factors. And what I found striking about his particular formula is that it calculates perceived power. So that's not the sort of a term that lends itself to real empirical study, which I've that was my impression of it. But here's the formula. So perceived power is basically the product of two sums. The first sum is essentially population and territory, so that's what he called critical mass, plus the nation's economic capability, plus its military capacity. And then that's times the sum of strategic purpose and the will to pursue national strategy, which I find kind of fascinating when you think about it, because that formula I mean, it's a formula in a very loose sense. I mean, some of those things would not be quantifiable reliably, I would say, in any real sense. But the fact that the formula includes ideas such as strategic purpose and the will to pursue a national strategy shows sort of, so, you know, it accounts for some very important intangible characteristics that one can conceive as being comparable between two nations, which are really, when you get down to it, are very, very complex, complex entities. And you can have a, you know, obviously a large nation that doesn't have very much will to pursue a national strategy, simply takes care of, the politicians take care of what they want to take care of, and that's it. And that leaves the nation somewhat at a disadvantage, say in a major catastrophe or whatnot. Whereas on the other hand, a small nation with limited resources might very well have a very aggressive national strategy and a strong will to pursue it. Such as if, you know, basically you're banking your nation on tourism, and you're going to, you know, try to draw hordes of people in, and the whole nation is essentially united behind the cause. You can imagine how that would actually position the nation very strongly. Now, the criticism of these kinds of models, from what I've read, is that when you actually look at the formulas and you think about how you would calculate, if you were to really try to calculate these things, what you would wind up with is a lot of work to produce what would be an obvious result. For example, you can kind of know intuitively how Klein's formula would work with, say, the United States or with a lot of established powers, because a lot of those powers do have significant population, significant territory, significant amounts of available resources, tremendous capabilities in its economy and its military. Strategic purpose and will tend to be a little bit high. One doesn't require a whole lot of work to figure that out. So then we're kind of back to, well, so what if then one's competitive advantage as a nation is understood to be very large, but not necessarily precisely very large. We don't need to know necessarily whether it's precise or not. I think that's a fair criticism, and it's a fair statement. But then how do you use competitive advantage then as a tool to drive change? If you leave it as a MacGuffin, as a label, as a bumper sticker, it doesn't become very compelling on its own. So you do have to have something that allows someone to understand what you mean by losing competitive advantage. Perhaps if you are already in agreement with the change agent and says that we've got to do something, we're going to lose our competitive advantage, yay, 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 sky is falling, all that stuff. Okay, then fine. It's a MacGuffin. It's understood. The meaning, the symbolic meaning of that term is served its usefulness. But to perhaps those not in the know, it gets a bit nebulous. How much do you lose, or how much competitive advantage do you lose if you can't measure it in the first place? So what I've tried to do in my work at the War College is to try to come up with at least a language by which one, for military organizations, and I think some of these are applicable to other types of organizations, somewhat of a typology of competitive advantage that at least allows one to articulate a little bit more thoroughly what advantage is being compared, so that one can at least make a case to support a change effort. And so some of these are pretty straightforward, I think. And I'll just give a few examples, and they do appear in several of my writings, which are available through the website. But for example, one is overmatch, and that is some form of qualitative superiority, a capability that you have that somebody else does not. Another is capacity or sufficiency, and that is we may have the same stuff, but I've got more, or the more that I have is of a more advanced quality or a more advanced addition, which means that I am superior in some way. Interoperability. When we talk about organizations that depend upon its ability to plug and play with others, that is a quality that is important and that can be expressive of a competitive advantage. The ability to generate capability from scratch without a lot of effort, or with less effort or less expenditure of resources. You think about if you have a need to generate 10,000 widgets and you don't have the factories for it, well, you're talking about the ability, the agility to stand up another production line someplace and produce all those widgets. That's, you know, the ability to mobilize and surge capability is another one. And then one final thought is, especially when it comes to, say, a government organization where you don't really see direct competition between governments, not in the same sense as you would firms, it may be useful to think about the competitive advantage as an expression of a delta between a government or between an organization and itself in another period of time. And I think I find this as pretty common, where we may be talking about a competitive advantage against another organization, but it's really that what they're doing is saying that we used to be able to do something, or we used to be better prepared to do something in the past, and our own capability has gotten weaker. And that's essentially competitive advantage compared against yourself in the past. Or you're thinking about you need to build competitive advantage in the future. Well, again, that's a comparison against yourself at another period of time. That's another, I think, another useful way of thinking about the term, rather than focusing solely on whether or not it makes sense to describe yourself as in a state of competition directly with another entity. That's really useful if there really isn't a direct apples-to-apples comparison between two organizations, which can definitely come about if you have vastly different strategies and vastly different capabilities, but yet you're still competing against each other in the marketplace or in the international scene. So I think the big lesson in this is that there are a number of terms that I've encountered that do kind of play fast and loose with the definitions, that they do serve the role of MacGuffin in some circumstances, driving action and driving conversation, even though not everybody knows what it is. But at some point, it has to be defined in some way. Otherwise, it will only add to confusion. It may thrill your and motivate your friends, but it won't change too many of other people's minds, will it? And that's all for now. The views expressed are my own and do not necessarily reflect those of the United States Army War College, the United States Army, or the Department of Defense. Thank you for listening, and have a great day.